Il Politica Culturali, miai Carsten Schwier. Meħba l-programm iħor fis-sensiela il-politika kulturali miegħi Karsten Xwieraq. Illum il-programm kif ġieli ġara qabel se jkun bl-Ingliż għax għandi mistiedna speċjali miegħi Bettina Huċek li hija artista viżiva illi però toopera anke f'kampi oħra. Bettina, welcome to the program. In what is what I was saying was what
we were nifem.
As we were saying at the beginning, before we started the program, so we were talking about sort of this positioning you were describing to me of being a visual artist with the mind, with the even the spirit and the perspective of a visual artist. However, the way you're describing it to me, it was like reaching out and stretching also into curation, also film, also, as we will have the occasion to talk about, the types of projects and engagements which may be, even in a playful, jokey type of way, like to bend boundaries and stretch a bit expectations.
Exactly. It might come across now almost like as a promotion of being a visual artist, but I think visual artists for me have something of being positive tricksters that move around in this contemporary society, in the sense that as a visual artist, at least that's how I like to see myself, like I can walk around and perceive things in a very playful way. So with something like the naivete of a child, without being naive and uneducated, but at the same time with an educational storage in your brains, and then as an artist you can compose these fragments together and dream up new worlds. And I think these new worlds are paramount in our society, where everything becomes very dogmatic, very rigid, and even it feels like our world is being faced with so many new threats. I mean, let's just think about COVID-19, and it's something that so people get more and more scared. It had already been building up, you know, like there's more and more. You need an insurance for this. Yes. You're scared to travel to this place. This might be dangerous. So there's so many dangers, and I think the only thing that we have in store to face a dangerous situation or a perceived dangerous situation is actually to smile at the world and to laugh at it. So I think if we all approach the world in a more childish way, in a more playful way, we could create a better society, or maybe not a better society, maybe that's too utopian, but like at least something that creates more of a community. And that's how I like to see the contribution of visual artists to this society.
Yes. And even from also what I know about you and collaborations we've had before and we'll have the occasion to touch upon, like with projects like Fragmenta,
exactly,
and others you've been working on for a number of years, there is sort of this, even in the English language sometimes we distinguish between childish and childlike, where it's, you shouldn't be naive, as you said, but you shouldn't be sort of innocent.
It's about openness, I think. It's about being open to all possibilities. I mean, why be faced with a problem and say like, oh no, this is impossible from the onset? Like in the beginning, I think when you're dealing with something new, or you're tackling a subject matter or problem or a project, anything, you should be open to all the possibilities, because then I mean, laws of physics will discard some of the options, and people or regulations or rules or laws will discard other elements, and so you can narrow down, and in the end you find the perfect solution that is almost like middle ground between your big utopian dream and what is really doable.
Yes.
but I wouldn't want to start from starting small. And you know, it's better to aim for the sky and hit the fence than start from the ground.
Yeah, maybe the other way around. What you made me smile about as well before, speaking about smiles, is I currently have a base at the university within the FEMA, the Management Accountancy building, because the Tourism and Culture Institute is there. And one of the screen images that flashes when you're walking through with communication about university is a promotion for the insurance course. And it's what you were saying. It's sort of, if you want like a really safe occupation, which will always be in demand, it's insurance. And that's what this image is saying. It's like insurance is something that people have been looking for forever, and they will keep doing that. It's like accountancy and being held accountable and an insurance policy. And I guess you don't want to do away with that. So you always want regulators and policymakers and lawmakers to be doing their job. Sometimes there is no the little joke with inverted commas of sort of creative accounting. You don't want accountants to be too creative, because that can lead you in unwanted territory. But then what you're saying is, those who do their serious job have to do it, and to do it seriously. But it doesn't mean you need to sort of suck out all the fun and all the creativity and looking for solutions in maybe unorthodox ways. And it has become very popular after decades, where sort of even big companies, business, governments engage with artists in order to try to find these solutions you were talking about, by taking routes which are a bit maybe less orthodox.
Yeah, I think that's a very good initiative. What you mentioned, that artists are being employed by companies, for example, to give new feedback or something. Since we've been talking about cultural policy, like, I see a drawback in that, because what might be a problem is that if artists are then being employed to substitute social workers, whereas social workers are lacking in our society, or there's a lack of funding for health or social work, and then governments decide, like, oh no, we'll use the artists to not replace social workers, but put them on the side and then take over. So this doesn't do anybody a favor. Neither society, neither the social workers, nor the visual artists, or any artists for that matter. So I think, getting back to cultural policy, it is actually something very, very important to balance. And cultural policy has the ability to divide funding for different sectors of what is needed in a, let's say, social democratic society that we hope to live in. At least I hope to live in that. But then at the same time, there needs to be a certain trust towards the abilities of these various sectors. And maybe that's putting like the finger right in the problem of where I see the biggest problem of cultural policy is that, since everything needs to be regulated or measured, mostly financially, yes. It's like you have to be accountable in some way. But a lot of artistic or creative actions are not accountable. And sometimes you just take a wrong path and you completely run against a wall to realize, oh no, this was a dead end. I have to step back and take a second route to then come to a solution. But you cannot financially account this whole trip towards the first dead end. So how do you justify, you know,
what's your experience of that? Because I know that both in Germany and in Malta, you've worked on a number of projects, even a few years ago, co-curating the Maltese Pavilion for the Venice Biennale when Malta returned after a hiatus of a number of decades. But also internationally, you, as other artists, operating in various fields, involving communities, involving local and international levels, always, in a way, one of the dead end walls you do have to climb over is this funding mechanism of all the time asking justification for every hour you spend on a project.
I mean, in all the bigger projects, in the beginning I started to keep a timesheet and then you just drop it, because if at the end of the project I come to a hourly wage of €1.40, it's just depressing. I just don't want to do that. So, no, but it's just talking about, so maybe I'll start with my private practice and funding related to my own personal project, and then we can talk about like community projects.
Yes, sure.
So if I apply for funding, it is always interesting what the funders ask for, and of course every decade has certain keywords. You can almost call them hashtags. So like in the 90s it was all about participation, and like in the 2000s it was like a lot of migration was very important to have on your agenda. So it's interesting how cultural policy kind of pushes visual artists to work towards a certain direction, mm-hmm. Which on the one hand is very good, because it enables people to make minorities or problems more visible. But on the other hand, it also can lead to a very dogmatic approach that only projects are funded that actually contain these keywords or hashtags, and the other ones just fall through the grid. So I think like very positive cultural policy should have the ability to take risks, to say like, okay, we fund a couple of projects that really push the agenda of what we need in our society, to say we need more a positive view on migration, or like to we need to come to terms with the fact that like all European societies are we are not monothematic national societies, but like it's all a mix and a mash pot,
mm-hmm.
and it's been for decades, but people seem to be stuck in a kind of antiquated version of what a nation state is.
In a way, providing that reassurance, maybe female reassurance, that we are in control of. You mentioned decade by decade, which is really interesting, because it's true. There are these keywords, even within European Union funding, for example, where you can see sort of work plans and agendas taking over from one another and setting new aims, for example. But what you said, and this is maybe where also the community aspect can be seen in a particularly engaging light, is if you had to have sort of a percentage, almost like an open fund, a lost fund, where a number of funds would go for sort of a bit risky projects.
Exactly,
need to know exactly where you're going to end up.
I think there will always be people, because there's always good and bad people in every field, in every society, in every country, so also among artists. There will always be some who take the money and then they slack. But I would say this is like the minimum amount of people. But most artists, I would say, would take a funding and turn it into something positive. And it's not only about having the funds at your disposal, it's also, what I think is almost more important, is the trust that is conveyed to you by a funding body to give you money and time that you can freely just work and experiment, and something positive or something project-wise might come out, or it might not, but it will always lead you on your creative path. And I think funding is, it's not only money, it's really also the trust, and this has to be communicated in a more transparent way.
Bettina, you were mentioning the point of trust, which I think is important across human relations and society. But within policy and within funding, I think there's an extra something to it. Because to me, trust also means building relationships, means time. It means it's very difficult to assess project applications or CVs just off paper. Sometimes even just an online type of communication, which we are experiencing more because of the COVID-19 restrictions. So in a way, my memory goes back to what I've read, what I've put up, exposed myself through reading other materials, say 60s, 70s Europe, certain projects like in the Netherlands, for example, where artists could have a number of months, if not years, in a way guaranteed by the state.
Like a yearly working stipend.
Yes, in order not to deliver expected outcomes,
yeah.
Which has become one of the key words today, outcomes, deliverables, and all
exactly,
that.
Exactly, that's when you become accountable.
I mean, but it's a more open-ended and inspired approach.
I can see, of course, the other side. Like, I can see the funding body who says, like, how can we trust this person to do something with our money? So I think one important element is actually to put in place juries to select. Mm-hmm. I mean, the selection procedure has to be very transparent and very open. And when the selection procedure is not transparent and open, we have cases like this in Malta, I'm not going to go into this, then I would say it easily goes into a very easily corrupted situation, because then individual people become too much of a say of which projects get the funding or get the
And in a context, I guess, like Malta, but many other situations, I don't know if you think of Malta as a town, a village, one municipality, and that really happens because you've got people who can be also influential through contacts, through work, through visibility, and that can start sort of maybe corroding a little bit as the more openness level. I remember sort of even critiques about maybe how, I don't know, Yugoslavia at the time of Tito operated these generous, open support schemes for artists, however, would also be controlled within a system.
I mean, it's interesting. Like, a cultural field is, of course, it depends on so many different aspects, freedom of speech and freedom of expression is really, really important, and funding is the other thing. So collaboration is a third element. I don't know, so many different items or elements come into play. And since we were talking about collaborative projects beforehand, I see these projects almost like in the image of a huge dance, like a video, a film or theater production with a lot of stakeholders, a lot of players in the game, and a lot, every stakeholder has their own part and their importance. The play or the dance could not take place with anybody missing, but not everybody is on the same platform or has the same roles, responsibilities, or visibility.
And maybe not even the same score to keep the image going.
Like an orchestra, like you need every single instrument to play the whole score. That's how I see the big collaborative elements.
But you know, yourself, as you said at the beginning of the program, come from and identify yourself sort of with the space inhabited by the visual arts as a visual artist, but then yourself take on different roles. So it's curatorship, it's different media, going up and down in different levels, as we said, from international projects, international exposure, to also smaller, more particular, quaint explorations, say, of Maltese legends, myths, cultures. I guess that flexibility is innate in you, but also in a way makes it impossible to be boxed in into a particular rigid scheme where you have to sort of tick off boxes and just say, yes, I am doing this role, and that's That's all I'm doing. I know that about you. What about other people you work with? So do you look out for that in collaborators, in artists, maybe even in young people who you see, you know, up and coming and having this mind frame which is a bit open, a bit flexible. Do you look for these qualities as well in the people you work with?
That's a difficult question because it really depends on the collaboration that I need or that I'm looking for. Sometimes you just need a very specific collaboration. For example, somebody who's extremely good with sound, and then I actually would look more for somebody who's quite geeky and
very specific.
Yeah, and monothematic on sound. Personally, I do like, and I would like to get back to your point that you were making about flexibility. Maybe it's more about a general openness or what I perceive as culture. I don't really like to make the distinction between high culture and low culture. And therefore, whenever it comes about elite culture, I also don't really buy into that because culture is just culture. Even like, if you go to Gozo and somebody does amazing craftsmanship that is part of culture, it's maybe not something that I would hang into a museum of visual arts, but it's definitely a cultural expression that has an importance and a relevance in the society. So culture is a much broader term, and maybe it's more that I like to see myself as somebody who works in the cultural field and not so much in a narrow-minded visual arts, very specific.
That be a difficulty for policymakers, funders of that?
Yes, it's always
been inability to pin you down in a particular area.
No, it's always been a difficulty. Like in my personal life, moving from curation to. Even within the visual arts, people are saying, like, well, now you did photography, but now you write short stories and now you make a film. How does this come together? But it's more about, that's how I want to perceive culture, is like there is something that you want to express that is a reaction to what is happening in society. So also something paramount for my personal work is that I don't see culture as detached from contemporary society. On the contrary, it's like a direct reflection to actually also very political or socially relevant issues. Of course, then not working as it with them in a journalistic way, but in a creative way. It's more like telling, like showing people, like in a playful way. And I don't see a contradiction between talking about something that goes wrong in society and making it playful or in a joking way.
There's a subtle balance and approach to that, isn't it? Because you don't want to sort of make fun or minimize the seriousness of certain issues.
It's a tightrope dance.
But at the same time, you want to sort of engage people, maybe from different backgrounds, from different even cultural understandings.
Exactly.
To come together.
And it's also about being open or like providing the openness to the viewer. So like instead of dogmatically preaching something, which a lot of people do, I would like to see art or culture as something that provides something that people can look at wherever they come from. They look at it from their perspective and they see or they take from it whatever they can. So it's readable or detectable from many different levels.
And also, although we're at the very end of the program and we should maybe draw some conclusions, but you are making me think of the different interpretations that people bring. And it's not a matter of having sort of an allocation of one interpretation per person.
No, exactly. The more the better.
Also, people change, they do different things. I'm thinking within the environment of university students and even researchers and academics that grow, change ideas.
No, and it's all part of the field. Every interpretation is part of the puzzle, and we're all part of the puzzle.
And it seems that it's a puzzle. It's an interesting image because it's a puzzle which is all the time growing. You don't end up like a 500-piece puzzle, and then you put in the last piece and say, "Okay, that's done. I can frame it." you sort of end up jumbling it up again.
Yeah.
So just a quick question into maybe, I don't know, new jumbled puzzles you're working on. Just a glimpse maybe on something you can mention.
Yes, so I'm working on a film that talks about the Malta Atlantis hypothesis.
Oh.
Like the theory.
That's a puzzle.
That the theory that Malta could have been ancient Atlantis with everything that belongs to it. But I would like to include into the film also a vision of contemporary Malta with all its highs and lows.
Warts and lows. Right. Mm. Very good. Thank you very much, Bettina, for being with me.
Thank
on
you,
the
Carsten,
show.
For it was a pleasure.
Grazie l-semmija kolla u nistedinkom tkunu miħaj u mistedin iħor għal-programm iħor il-politika kulturali.